Today we are discussing a paper by Andrushko et al. Entitled Unilateral Strength Training Leads to Muscle-Specific Sparing Effect During Opposite Homologous Limb Immobilization, published in the Journal of Applied Physiology. We have Dr. Jonathan Farthing representing the authors and Dr. David Beam as external expert taking part in our discussion. My name is Esther Dupont-Verstaeten, and as the associate editor who handles the peer review, I will moderate the discussion. Dr. Farthing, could you briefly tell us, what was the hypothesis being tested in this paper? How did you test it? And what did you find that was not previously known?
So our purpose was to examine the sparing effects of cross-education. So that is the cross-education effects from unilateral training to an opposite immobilized limb. So we term that sparing effects because it involves a decrease in the amount of loss or a sparing of muscle strength and size in the immobilized limb. And our purpose was to examine the specificity of those effects, so to the muscle. And the second purpose was to determine if the sparing effects in the immobilized limb could be detected using a muscle cross-sectional area measure, which had not been previously done before. So specificity has been tested in what I would call traditional cross-education studies in the past, where there is no immobilization. It is simply healthy individuals training one limb, and we examine effects in the untrained side. But in this case, where there is immobilization, the specificity has not been examined. And also, the effect has been shown about, this is the fifth time now in the literature it's been documented, and it's only been shown using ultrasound measures of muscle size. Our purpose was to use a volume measure from peripheral quantitative computed tomography, PQCT, to see if we could also detect it with a muscle cross-sectional area measure.
Wonderful. I wanted to ask, David, you're the expert in this field. What is your take on this paper?
Well, this is a really interesting study. First of all, cross-education was first mentioned by Edward Scripture way back in 1894. So you can imagine that over the last 120 years, there's been a multitude of studies on this topic since then. And normally, as John had mentioned, most of these studies have been done on healthy individuals. And so when we see a increase in strength on the contralateral side because of training unilaterally, it's usually ascribed to neuroadaptations or nervous system adaptations that are radiating over to the untrained limb. But what's really unique about this study is that they used immobilization and they put it on the contralateral limb. And when they trained the other limb, that not only strength, which is what we see in healthy people, but also the muscle volume was preserved. So if all the other studies always said there was neuroadaptations that caused this increase in strength with cross-education, you can't ascribe neuroadaptations to an improvement in muscle volume. So this is really interesting because it could have major implications in terms of rehabilitation when people are under disuse or immobilization. So it's got a lot of potential for the field. The only limitation that I would think of in this study was that there was only 8 participants in each group. So you had 8 for train and 8 for control. And that might limit the statistical power of the study.
So John, would you like to comment on that?
Yes. So we chose to train the right arm and look at the sparing effects to the left arm, which was immobilized. And we used eccentric training, so muscle lengthening training, and we tested eccentric contractions, max voluntary contractions, concentric and isometric on both limbs. And we also tested both the flexors and the extensors after training only the flexors on the trained side. And we also looked at muscle size of the flexor muscles and the extensor muscles using ultrasound, but then a total volume measure using the PQCT. And what we found is that there was specificity to the muscle that was trained. So the muscle size was spared only in the flexors, according to muscle thickness, and the strength was only spared in the flexor muscles, which were trained on the opposite side. Interestingly, though, eccentric strength training produced global strength increase across all 3 tested contraction types, eccentric, concentric, and isometric. So there's lack of specificity for the type of contraction, but specificity to the muscle. If you run in what we call traditional cross-education studies without immobilization, you see an increase in strength in the untrained limb, but there's virtually no evidence or very little and limited evidence of there being any increase in the muscle. So the muscle does not, we don't see hypertrophy in an untrained limb in a traditional cross-education study. So what is sparing the muscle is the big question, because we know there are neural mechanisms at play. There's increased excitability of the ipsilateral pathways. There's some evidence of improved communication between hemispheres, decreases in interhemispheric inhibition. There's evidence of mechanisms at the spinal level, but in the literature prior, really nothing at the muscle level with these cross-education effects. So it's been ascribed to neural mechanisms.
I think it's really interesting that you propose another mechanism besides a neural-mediated mechanism. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's any endocrine-like mechanisms that are at play?
Yes, it's certainly possible. There hasn't been really anything done with this sparing model is to get at muscle mechanisms, endocrine mechanisms, myokines, exokines. The key question for us is, what is causing this specific effect? So that's something that I can't answer, and I'm happy to have some more discussion around that.
And John?
Yes.
So you used only eccentric contractions for your training.
Yes.
Why does the literature find that eccentric contractions are more effective than concentric when it comes to cross-education?
Yes, and indeed they do. There are several studies that have shown more potent effects with cross-education with eccentric training. We found, actually, no specificity to the type of training here in terms of strength. So strength was preserved across all three contraction types, which we didn't actually predict, but it is beneficial from a therapeutic perspective because it suggests that if you train using these eccentric contractions that you can spare across a variety of different contraction types that you might be exposed to, as part of rehabilitation, for example. But I will also come back to Dave's comment about the low subject number. So we did only have 8 per group. It was a casting study involving immobilization. So you can imagine it's not easy to recruit many participants to volunteer for that. But it could mean that we missed something. We lacked some power to be able to detect the effect in the extensors.
Yeah, so I like your comment on saying this is one of the novelties that I thought of this paper is indeed the measurement of the muscle mass and not just the strength. Do you think that in previous studies, it is possible that they did see an increase in strength because the mass was increased, but they never measured it?
In previous work, some studies have not measured muscle size changes at all. In every cross-education study that our lab has done historically, we've always measured muscle size in some way, even if it's crude with the small muscle thickness measure because it's really a distance value, because I think it's an important control variable to indicate that, in fact, the muscle size didn't change. Because if the size is spared, you'd expect the strength to be spared.
John, how do you see these experiments moving forward and particularly applicability to other populations?
Well, there has been some work in clinical populations to date, not very many studies. We did run one back in 2013 on with wrist fracture patients. So these were women that had suffered a distal radius fracture, and they trained using a grip trainer for a period of 6 months through their recovery. And we did find some hint there, particularly after 12 weeks post-fracture, that those women that trained using cross-education with a grip trainer, they had better recovery of strength and range of motion in their fractured limb. Paul Zare's lab out of University of Victoria, so Katie Dregert and Paul Zare, their study in stroke patients showed that cross-education had quite a potent effect in the lower limbs. So I think there's room for cross-education to be applied in these settings. We are certainly doing work in that area.
Yeah, cross-education would be a great model for fractures because quite a few years ago, we published an article taking a look at muscle activation levels with ankle fractures. And we found that individuals with ankle fractures had a precipitous drop in their ability to fully activate their muscles. So since cross-education, one of the mechanisms of cross-education is the neuroadaptations. We talked about the ability to increase recruitment or rate coding the other side. This would fit right in with the trying to preserve or offset these losses in muscle activation that you see when a person's been immobilized for such a long period of time.
So this is something that could be relatively easy to apply. You can send individuals home with some kind of grip training device if it's a fracture in the upper limb or if it's ankle, some other activity. And the evidence we've provided here that says muscle could be spared too.
Congratulations on a great study. This concludes the discussion of the paper, Unilateral Strength Training Leads to Muscle-Specific Sparing Effects During Opposite Homologous Limb Immobilization.